I'm Brian McCreath at WCRB, and I'm talking to Paul Merkello. He's the principal trumpeter of the Montreal Symphony Orchestra. And Paul, thanks for taking a little bit of time to talk with me today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This new recording that you have is it has a lot of music that's familiar to people who you know, kind of pay attention to classical music in general and trumpet concertos for sure. But I love the way that you framed it with the title The Enlightened Trumpet, because it brings together this whole idea of what was going on in the world when these pieces were written. And that kind of led me to think about the way that the Haydn even came into being, right? That it was kind of the result of a part of the evolution of the trumpet. So I guess I'm curious about the Haydn. I know, I can just assume, just knowing you as a trumpet player, that you've played this Haydn concerto since you were, I don't know, I'm going to take a wild guess and say maybe 12 or 13 years old.
That's a pretty good, yeah, that's a pretty good guess, actually.
That's not about right?
On the mark. Yeah, I didn't have the right trumpet, but I was definitely practicing at that time.
But I guess that, you know, sure, a lot of young players begin kind of toying around with the Haydn early on, but it takes a little while to understand exactly where the piece came from. So have you ever kind of gotten into looking into how the keyed trumpet for which it was originally written, kind of how it would sound on that instrument? Is that something that you've ever really kind of grappled with?
Well, I mean, I tried a keyed bugle one time and the results were not good. I was like, really, it was really out of tune. But what it gave me the sense of is that those keys are like saxophone keys. And so, you know, the action on that is a little slower than the modern day piston trumpet, where you can get very fast action on the valve. So, you know, the reason that we decided to call it the Enlightened Trumpet is obviously all of these works were written during the Age of Enlightenment. And that trumpet, the keyed bugle, was invented at that time. And I think that Haydn and Hummel were fascinated by the fact that for the first time in history, the sound of the trumpet became lyrical. Natural trumpet, generally speaking, unless you're in the very high tessitura of Bach, for example, was more sort of typical fanfare sort of instrument. And once you added the chromaticism, it brought out this accessibility to make it a virtuosic instrument. And so that chromaticism is something that I try to, you know, really dig into in my interpretation of both the Haydn and the Hummel.
Yeah. Well, and certainly the keyed bugle, I mean, I've tried one too. I mean, they are just a total handful. There's almost no way to make them actually sound really good.
Right.
It just has to be said.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a revelation in its time, but yeah, I'm glad to hear that you've actually tried one out and sort of just seen what it would do. And then you have something to work with as you think through how this piece would have worked. I mean, the program notes for your CD frame this really nicely, how those first three notes of the Haydn, like almost the most important three notes in the trumpet repertoire, never could have happened before. And so now when we play it or when we hear it, we kind of take it for granted. And so I imagine your looking into the keyed bugle and the way that it operated gave you a little bit of, I don't know, something behind those three notes and then the rest of the piece that informed it.
Well, there's a big responsibility with that. If you think of what how the public would have reacted in that moment, it was probably shocking. Those that were aficionados going to classical concerts, all of a sudden they hear a trumpet concerto that's being interpreted with the same accessible notes as a violin or a piano. So they probably were a little bit freaked out by, you know, the fact that the trumpet was making these sounds, even if it was greatly out of tune at the time. I have a feeling that the level of trumpet player was you know, Anton Weidinger, it was a superior player and interpretation. So that's probably why other composers got inspired to write for the same instrument.
Yeah. Well, that takes us to Hummel. So that was actually the one that I started on first. I waited a little bit on the Haydn. I got into the Hummel a little bit earlier. Something about it made me feel a little bit more comfortable taking it on. I don't know about you, whether that was the case as well. But, you know, when I was a kid. And yet there is something a little different about the Hummel. How would you describe, even though they're written within eight years of each other, but how different are the Haydn and the Hummel from each other?
Well, I would say the Hummel, you know, the first movement is the longest movement of the concerto, and it's more typical of what we'd expect, fanfare versus lyrical playing that's indicative in the Haydn. But if you go into the second and third movements of the Hummel, these are real special movements. The second movement for me is operatic, like an Italian opera, and it's got this very emotive and romantic quality that I would say is even more supercharged than the second movement of the Haydn. The Haydn, for me, that second movement is also emotional, expressive in a way, but more simple. And the Hummel second movement is I would say, like, going towards the Romantic era. Then you go to the third movement, which I decided to play extremely fast because the Rondo for me is almost like something like almost like a circus or something like out of control, wild and fun. And so, you know, I spoke with the conductor and I was like, how fast can we go? And, we got it pretty fast. But the reason I did that wasn't just to try to prove how fast it can be played, but really to give it that sort of like comic, circus, wild sort of fanaticism that contrasts very well to that second movement.
Believe me, you pulled it off, because it is so fun to listen to. I mean, you know, you're right that darkness, that sort of foreboding that's in the second movement, when that third movement begins, it's just suddenly like sunlight and light spirits. And I literally smiled when I was listening to it. But you also chose something I had not heard this before, and maybe that's more my indicative of who I am, but I had never heard Doc Schitzer's cadenza for this. Say a little something about who Timofey Doc Schitzer was and how you ran across this cadenza that you included in the Hummel.
Well, I have to say that I would not be playing the trumpet had it not been for a recording that I got when I was probably, I guess, 11 or 12 years old, of Timofey Doc Schitzer playing the Haydn and the Hummel on a B-flat trumpet. So for those listening that don't know, the trumpet that we should play that on was originally written for E trumpet. I'm speaking about the Hummel, and the Haydn was originally written for an E flat. So we play it on a modern E flat trumpet. And so to play it on a B flat trumpet for those non-trumpet players listening is quite a feat because it's a lower pitched instrument. So it makes those pyrotechnics just really, really difficult to play. And so I got this recording knowing that he was playing on a B flat. And I was, as we all did, as beginner trumpet players, we all played on B-flat. I had never heard anything like that. I had a recording of Maurice André, who was playing it on an E-flat. But to hear this phenomenal Russian trumpet player playing it with the same kind of elan and delicacy and virtuosity as Maurice André was just shocking to me. And it made me want to be a trumpet player. So throughout my life, I've done many of Doc Schitzer's arrangements, and I've studied his recordings, and as a matter of fact, when I was 18, I sent a cassette recording to him. Yes, I said cassette.
Oh my gosh, you sent a cassette to Doc Schitzer?
Yeah, I sent it to him because I wanted to take a lesson from him, and he wrote me back, and he said that he would take me as a student at the Bolshoi Conservatory in Russia, and it just kind of blew me away, but I wasn't ready to make that move. I was more interested in studying in the United States at that time, so... but I regret the fact that I never went to Russia and played a lesson for him because I never got to meet him. But he sent me a bunch of his recordings, and he sent me a method book all in Russian that has now been translated by Alphonse Leduc. And so Timofey Doc Schitzer has been a hero of mine and a great inspiration of mine throughout my whole life. And so I decided on this album, which I consider to be, one of those albums that in your lifetime as a trumpet player, if you get the opportunity to make it, to record the Haydn and Hummel, it's a signature moment. And I decided in this signature moment to feature my hero and my inspiration and actually not write my own cadenza, but play his in honor of him and what he meant to me as a trumpet player and a musician.
Oh, man, that is a fantastic story. I love the cadenza itself. Like I said, I had not heard it before, and now I love it even more because there's a fantastic story behind it. Wow, Paul, that is awesome. That is just terrific.
I had to transpose it, because what I did was I took it off his written for the B flat trumpet. Of course, then I transpose it for the E trumpet.
Right.
And some of the fingerings were not so user friendly, and some of the intonation was a little bit difficult. But I'm really happy that we chose to do it, and it's just a really fun and very challenging cadenza to play.
Oh, no kidding. Well, and that that transposition from B flat to E is not a standard one anyway, even to
That's
begin
not fun.
With. So I'm sure that
nobody,
that
no trumpet player wants to deal with
to
that.
Really take on. Well, tell me about the Telemann Concerto, because that's a piece that I mean Maurice André made this famous, and let me just ask you to describe what is the physical feeling, what is the challenge of especially that opening movement in the Telemann.
Well, that's it. The adagio, the opening movement, that's the real challenge. You've got to be able to play that at a tempo. You know, obviously, I've tried to keep it moving so that the phrasing leans forward, but you can't go too fast because it is an adagio. That one, for me, physically, is the most demanding movement out of the two piccolo concertos that I played, the other one being the Leopold Mozart concerto. But that first movement of the Telemann is physically really demanding. And obviously, you know, you don't want to show that. You want to make it sound simple. And so that took a lot of practice just to build the stamina, the endurance, the phrasing, the intonation to make that really sing and hopefully sound, you know, not as difficult as it actually is.
This, Paul, your sort of day job is playing in this major orchestra, one of the continent's best orchestras, one of the world's best orchestras, and so you on a regular basis are confronted with Strauss, Mahler, Beethoven, Brahms. How much stepping away from that world do you have to do to sort of take on these lyrical virtuosic concertos?
It's always really, really demanding to juggle the job, you know, as first trumpet of an orchestra like Montreal, and then to be able to prepare for these challenging solo works. It's a different kind of playing, and it's a different kind of interpretation. And so I always have to work backwards in my schedule, you know, find moments where I can, push a little harder in my practicing and not sacrifice the kind of lips that I need to play Mahler, Bruckner, or Strauss. And then, you know, as I'm getting closer to my solo performances, I just start to taper everything. And, you know, it's really important for me to understand my physical limitations so that I don't overdo the demands of either of those two responsibilities.
Yeah. But musically, does one sort of feed off of the other?
Yes, I would say so, because, you know, when we're playing that music, like Haydn, Mozart, Telemann in the orchestra, it always reminds me, that's the style, that's the sound, that's the intonation, that's the articulation. So, you know, definitely I try to make some transference between the two styles.
That's great, Paul. Well, Paul, thanks so much. Your new recording is just fabulous. I really appreciate the time, and I look forward to seeing you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it.